Welcome to In Season, where we explore farming and gardening in the Lower Columbia Pacific region. I'm your host, Teresa Retzloff. I first met beekeeper Tom Trusiewicz when he came out to my farm in Olney to capture a swarm of bees that was hanging out on a fence post near our barn. I was completely fascinated, watching him suit up and patiently, skillfully coax this undulating mass of buzzing bees into a box, all the while chatting cheerfully to me about bees, beekeeping, honey, and the weather. I was happy to meet up with him recently and learn more about the amazing art of keeping bees. Today on In Season, we're talking with Tom Trusiewicz. He's a beekeeper here in Clatsop County, and he's been keeping bees for a long time.
About 15 years.
And I have learned so much from him over the course of our encounters, various times when you come out to rescue hives from my property. And bees are so fascinating, and I think many people are interested in keeping bees or learning more about bees. And I think bees are in the news a lot as we hear about, you know, crises that they're having. So I'd love to talk about how you got started in beekeeping, and let's just kind of find out more about bees.
I started just because I was curious about it, and I have a friend in New Halem who invited me down to visit his bee yard, and at that point I was hooked. So I spent the entire next year reading everything I could find on honeybees, and a year later I got my first hives. So I've been going and studying and learning and talking to all the experts for over 15 years and teaching classes.
What do you think is it that caught your attention that first time? What is it that made you think, I want to do that?
It's just the sight and the smell of the hive. There's just so much going on, and the beautiful fragrance that comes off the honeycomb is just astounding.
It is amazing.
And especially in August.
Oh, yeah.
It's when you
can walk up to the hive and you smell it.
You just smell it, and you wonder how the bears aren't just raiding your hives, which they do on occasion.
Have you had bears?
Yes, I have.
Really?
Yeah. In fact, my property is about a quarter mile long, and I had a couple hives disturbed up on the hill, so now I have them closer to the house.
And just being closer to the house, the bears don't?
So far.
Are there other animals that disturb hives?
I hear that raccoons are supposed to. I've never seen that happen. But no.
I heard skunks.
Yes, skunks will. That's why I elevate my hives about 18 inches off the ground, because some people just keep them on pallets. And what skunks will do is they'll go up to the entrance and scratch it, and the guard bees will come out and the skunks will eat them. And then they'll just continue doing that. And the more guard bees come out after a night or two, the entire colony is gone.
The skunks will just eat the bees?
They eat the bees.
And it doesn't hurt them?
No.
It doesn't bother them?
No, they just eat away. And plus, they're working it at night, too, so the bees are a little less defensive at night. They're not really flying around.
So if you want to start beekeeping, I mean, what you're doing is keeping bees in a kind of a mock-up of a natural environment, but it's not naturally how bees would live.
Honeybees really like to find hollowed-out old logs and live in trees, or if they find a space in a wall cavity where you don't have insulation in your walls, they'll inhabit that a lot of times. I've seen a lot of swarms will go into the house where the electrical wire goes in, because the caulking falls away, and it's just a nice opportunity for them to get in there, and a lot of people don't insulate where the wires are. So
the bees will take care of that.
The bees will take care of that. And
is that a situation where you just have to rip the whole wall out
to
get the bees out?
And you have to be very careful, because you've got wires in there.
Oh, that's exciting.
Or you can leave the bees in, but the problem is that if the bees die, all the smell from the brood that's dying will permeate the house, and plus the honey dripping on the walls will stain the walls. So it's a difficult situation.
So protect where the wires go into your house.
Exactly.
But keeping bees, do you harvest honey from yours?
I do, but the last 2 years have been very difficult.
What's made it difficult?
The seasons are changing. The climate change. I also have horses, and normally around the 4th of July weekend is when everybody goes out and hays and gets their hay for their horses. This year, they were taking hay in Young's River in April.
Yeah.
I got my hay 6 weeks early this year.
Wow.
So the problem is that the bees are not built up. what they do is they build up their colonies and produce more and more bees. And then when our blackberries are in bloom here, which is around the 4th of July, that's when they're at their strongest population.
Yeah.
Now the blackberries are coming a lot earlier, and the bees haven't built up the population, so they don't have enough bees to bring all the honey back in.
Or so when the food's available, there's not enough bees.
Right. So at the end, when the population is in peak, there's more bees eating the stuff that was supposed to be brought in.
Oh.
So there's a large population when there's a dearth of nectar.
So is it the kind of thing that you could address, like, just simply by having more blooming plants around, or is it just that they key in on certain species?
Well, the blackberry is our big species here.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is if there's not enough honey if they don't produce enough honey, they won't make it through the winter. So we have to feed them all winter.
And is feeding them, you know, because you feed them sort of a sugar water mix. Is that, I mean, what does that do to them? Because it's not naturally what they would, I mean, honey is sugar, but it's different than the kind of sugar that we feed them.
Well, yeah, it's more fructose and things of such, but we just feed them granulated sugar in water.
Yeah.
Just the same. It's pretty much the same as the hummingbird food.
Okay.
So a lot of times, if you don't have a bee guard, you'll see honeybees going to the hummingbird feeders.
Then
in the dead of winter, when they don't take as much syrup or liquid nectar, I put in some dry verture, which is basically baker sugar.
Okay.
It's a really fine sugar. You don't want to use the other sugar, the powdered sugar, because that has cornstarch in it, and bees can't digest cornstarch.
Oh.
So we have a super fine grade of sugar called dry vert, and you just feed it to them.
In a dry form, or do you mix it?
Yeah, in
a
dry form. Okay. You just spread it right on the bees. And the good thing about it is that if they have any varroa mites on them, it knocks the varroa mites off.
Oh, so they just basically dust themselves with sugar.
And they eat it off of one another, and they get a good meal that way.
It's like a great party in the middle of winter.
And the reason they don't take a lot of syrup is because when it's cold out, they have to fly to evacuate their bowels. And if before you go to bed, if you drink a lot of water, you're going to have to get up in the middle of the night. And they don't want to do that, because if they go out, it's really cold, and they might just freeze to death before they get back to the hive. So if they eat dry food, they don't have a lot of moisture content in them in the winter.
What time of year do you normally harvest honey?
You can do it here as early as July, but what happens is they take the nectar, turn it into honey, and then they cap it with wax. Mm-hmm. Just like when Grandma used to make jellies and jams, she'd put paraffin on it. But they put wax on it to preserve it, to prevent any more moisture from getting in. If moisture gets into the honey, it's apt to ferment.
Okay.
And that would be bad for the bees. So when you find that your frames are at least 90% capped, then you can take the honey. If you do it before that, the honey isn't cured yet. It's mostly nectar and still has a high water content.
So it's better quality longer.
Now, what I do is I wait usually till September because I like my honey to have a full range of different pollens in it, because a lot of the people who buy honey from me think that, or I'm sure, I shouldn't say think. There's never been a double-blind study to say that the pollen in honey will prevent you from having allergies. But a lot of people anecdotally say that that is what happens. So I like to give my honey customers the full range of pollen from April all the way through September.
And then they're exposed to many different types of pollen through the honey.
Well, they bring pollen in as a food source. That's their protein source. Their nectar is their carbohydrate source, but sometimes the pollen gets mixed in with the honey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So when you buy honey, you want to buy raw honey if you're using this to try to prevent allergies. Now, another funny thing about honey is that if you heat it up to over 110 degrees, you pasteurize it.
Yeah.
So what do people do with honey? They put it in tea. How hot is that?
So essentially, you're pasteurizing it.
And if you bake with it, you're doing the same thing.
So if you're looking for the health benefits, you have to just take a spoonful of honey.
Yep, just eat it raw. Then it's the best for you.
Well, it's not a terrible thing to do. A spoonful of honey is an amazing thing.
And limits your intake to it. You know,
that's true.
In a day, well, it'll fit your needs.
I want to say one thing that I remember when you came out to our farm one time. There was this amazing hive of bees that had wild bees that had landed on a fence post. And in watching you work, it was so fascinating. And, you know, I was nervous. I hadn't been around bees very much. And I remember you telling me something about how to hold my breath, mm-hmm. that the bees could tell where I, like, because of the oxygen.
The carbon dioxide.
Carbon dioxide that I was breathing out, that's how they knew. They would key on. And you talk a little bit more about that.
Well, they can see carbon dioxide. And to them, the mammals who breathe carbon dioxide are the ones that will bother their nests. So, like, the bears will come in, and I guess maybe some wolverines or something.
Or raccoons or skunks, whatever.
Honey badgers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, and so when they see the carbon dioxide, they know that there's a predator around, and they'll start boiling out and want to sting you. So if you ever have a honeybee want to sting you, what they'll do first is bump you in the forehead. And that's a warning. So the best thing to do is just hold your breath and back away slowly, and you probably will not get stung. This does not work with yellow jackets or any other type of thing. But honeybees, that's their life. If they sting you, they're going to die because they leave their stinger and a poison sac and a pump behind, and they can't survive without that.
Okay.
So
it's a good strategy. And it seemed to work. I mean, that was what was fascinating. I mean, it was, you know, you had to hold your breath for a while.
And sometimes I just come upon some bees that are just so gentle, and other ones are really hot. And you just look at their hive funny, and they just boil out and try to get you. So,
have you been stung?
Oh, all the time.
And you're not allergic to them?
Not yet. But that could change.
Yeah, that's something. So I was curious about that, too, because a lot of people are nervous around bees. Mm-hmm. But how do you, I mean, is there any way to know if you're really allergic to bees other than getting stung and then going into anaphylactic shock?
That is the bad sign, right? A lot of people will just swell up and they'll think that they're allergic, but it's just a normal reaction to the poison that's in you. But we always have EpiPens on hand.
Okay.
Oddly, my wife is allergic to bumblebee stings, but
really?
Not to honeybee stings.
I didn't even know that bumblebees could sting
you.
I don't think I've ever been stung by a bumblebee.
Well, you have to really upset them. I've had a lot of
What
cold.
Does she do?
Well, my wife, she has an EpiPen around.
Okay.
And what happened was somebody called me and they had some bumblebees living in their house. And I want to relocate them.
Uh-huh.
So I bring them home. Most of the time, bumblebees don't like to be relocated, and you bring them home, and they'll go somewhere else.
Yeah.
But we had one hive that just stuck around. My wife was nosy, and she looked in the box once too often.
They let her know they weren't happy about that.
So.
Oh, yeah. Bumblebees are so, I love them. They're just, they're adorable. I think they're great bees.
And they do some work that regular honeybees can't do well. Like cranberries.
Uh-huh.
If you put honeybees on the cranberries, they will weigh less. Their colony will weigh less when you take them off because they have to eat so much just to pollinate it. We're bumblebees, and they're just big, and they just get in there and get the thing done.
Yeah, they seem to be attracted to very different flowers.
Yes, I see more bumblebees on my blueberries,
uh-huh.
Not so much honeybees. So they're.
What kind of habitat do bumblebees like? Do they need?
To live.
Yeah.
Oddly, they like to find an old mattress out in the woods.
Okay. So not the thing you necessarily want to have out in your garden.
Right. Other than that, they'll make their own home underground.
Okay, so they're underground.
And sometimes in the drier vent of your house where the
germs,
but they like to live underground.
Okay.
And they will not occupy the same place 2 years in a row.
Okay.
You can also build on the internet. You can find plans to build bumblebee houses.
Okay.
And it's just a small box that has a divider in it, and it's very simple. But trying to get them to colonize that is
hard.
Tough.
They're not as easy as honeybees.
Not at all.
So, but do they argue with each other? I mean, that's something I've been curious about because I see them just go to different plants on our farm, and they all seem to be perfectly fine, or sometimes all being on the same plant.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't seem to be mad at each other.
No, they're fine. There is competition of some sort, The best way I can explain this is one year I had 10 hives in a row.
Mm-hmm.
The next year I had 4 hives in the same place. And the year that I had 4, I got just as much honey as I did from the year that I had 10.
Really?
Because of the competition. The bees have to fly further
to get
more nectar. So if you're trying to put 10 hives in one spot, they're going to compete and they have to go further.
So more is not necessarily a better thing.
So I like to put 4 in one location and maybe a quarter mile away put another 4.
So what's the distance that, like...
They can go up to 2.5 miles.
Really?
Yes. That's an extreme...
If they're really hungry.
Yes, like out in the desert or something, mm-hmm. where the blooms aren't quite as
readily
prevalent as they are around here. So it's nice to give them things to get to. Let me give you some examples of what they like. They like borage. They like sunflowers, corn, blackberries, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the major ones. The Sedum Autumn Joy is another one.
Yeah, that's such a great plant.
And most of those are really late.
Uh-huh.
And oddly, late nectar produces honey that crystallizes.
We're going to take a break now to remind you that you're listening to Coast Community Radio on KMUN 91.9 FM and KTCB Tillamook 89.5 FM. And we're streaming live at coastradio.org. If you're just joining us for In Season, this week we're talking with Astoria beekeeper Tom Trusewitz.
What about fruit trees? I know that honeybees are used commercially to pollinate a lot of fruit and nut trees.
They are. Around here it's kind of rough because the honeybees don't like to fly under 55 degrees. And when our apple trees are blooming, it's usually a bit colder than that. So I suggest getting orchard mason bees
for your fruit trees.
For your fruit trees. The thing is that certain trees like plums, its nectar is more viscous.
Uh-huh.
So it's like trying to suck a milkshake through a really tiny straw, and they will avoid it unless there isn't anything else good around.
So of the fruit trees, do they like apples?
They do, if it's warm enough to deal with.
So if you have one of those warm days
early
on when that's a lot of variables for the poor bees.
It is. But now with our climate change, who knows, it's going to be probably getting warmer for the apple bloom.
Yeah. Are you noticing a lot of changes in the patterns of how your bees act just with the seasons being so, like, starting to be different?
Not so much as just finding that the populations are off.
Yeah.
It's just hard for them to survive. So I haven't taken any honey in the last 2 years because the change in the nectar season and the bees not developing quickly enough.
Is it better for them? I've heard that it's like what the benefits that are in honey, like for us, are also there for the bees. And so for them to have their own honey that they're feeding off of over the winter is better for them.
Oh, it is. It definitely. But they like nectar. They prefer nectar because it's thinner. Honey to them is like sea biscuits to a sailor. It's something that you have. It's a preserve that when nothing else is there, you've got it. And it's a high-energy food for them, but it's thick.
It's not their favorite.
It's not their favorite.
That's crazy thinking about how much we crave it.
Yes. I don't know if their tastes are...
Yeah. Well, they are slightly different as a creature than we are.
Quite a bit.
I am fascinated by their society, too. I think it's interesting. I was thinking about how we as humans like to anthropomorphize everything, of course. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the way that bee society works, and it just seems really brutal. But it's kind of efficient, too. It's really efficient and pretty fascinating.
It's very efficient. But you also have to remember that worker bees only live for 6 weeks during the flying time. They can live all winter because they're not flying, but they wear themselves out. They spend their first 21 days, they emerge as an adult bee.
Okay.
And the first 21 days, they do all different sorts of jobs in the colony. And on the 22nd day, they will start their foraging. And at that point, they wear themselves out.
Just like flying the 2 miles to go find and then coming back.
And coming back and just making all these trips. And it's really sad, but sometimes you'll see bees walking across the ground because they don't have the strength to fly anymore.
Aww.
And when I first started, I'd pick them up and put them back in the hive, and they just fall right back out and try to go for another round.
Yeah.
But
that instinct is really powerful.
It is very powerful. That's
And that's just them being tired, probably near the end of their life.
That's it.
Wow.
So 6 weeks, that's not long to
live. And then they just sort of drop dead because they're exhausted?
Yeah. Or, well, they don't so much drop dead as they wander off and they don't have enough heat over the night to sustain themselves, so they die of exposure.
Wow, it's a rough life.
It is. And, well, the drones,
but also glorious while they're living.
It is. The drones are another interesting thing. Those are the males. And they are born at any time of the year, of course. But at the end of the year, the honeybees don't want to feed them through the winter, so they kick them out. So drones will only live
1 year.
1 year.
And then they get booted out to freeze to death.
That's it.
That's a rough life.
It is. But, and the queens can live up to 4 years.
Okay. So. And you can only have one queen in a colony.
You should only have one. I've had one hive that had three queens in it, oddly.
And they got along? Or not got along, but
they didn't bother each other.
They worked it out?
Yeah, they somehow did.
Oh.
And it's just strange when you pull a frame, you say, oh, there's a queen, and then you pull another frame, hey, there's another one. So.
And somehow they were making it work.
And they were. And then there's another procedure that beekeepers can do by having two queen hives where they separate them. And what they want to do is get the pheromones going really strong, and the bees get all agitated and they overwork themselves and they produce a lot of honey. But as I become older in my beekeeping experience, the less I'm worried about producing honey or wax for myself. I'd rather just the bees to be natural. I stopped buying bees from bee farms.
Uh-huh.
I'm only collecting swarms now.
Wow, so that's how you get all your hives. That's
how I'm getting my hives now. And the swarms are usually year-old queens, and I try to grow my own queens out of that.
Okay.
And I'd like to get away from using boxes. The honey boxes.
Uh-huh.
I'd just like to have a hollow log and put the bees in there, because that's what they
so
like.
So they basically form their own comb.
Yeah, and they like drawing a long comb.
Uh-huh.
They don't really like being limited to the little boxes we put them in.
And well, the boxes are what makes it efficient for us to take the honey out.
Exactly.
Because you have those frames that you pull out, and you put them in a spinner, and it...
Yep, and you can reuse the frames.
So really it's for our convenience and not for theirs.
It is, but I'm just more interested. The older I get, the more I'm just getting interested in letting the bees be natural and not trying to take any, harvest any of their products. And
so if you were keeping them in a log, would you still go in and check on them periodically? Would you still
just
kind of let them be there?
Observe them from the outside.
Wow.
And you can tell a lot from about the hive from the outside. You know, see how many dead bees are out front. So you can smell it, the smell of everything smells okay. And if you have a way of opening it, you can look in and see the health of the brood.
Uh-huh. So when you do open up a hive, that's usually when you put on a full suit, mm-hmm. and you get a smoker.
Yes.
So explain the smoke. Why do you smoke?
Smoke does two things. It tells, when you smoke the honeybees, it tells them that there's a forest fire and that they're going to be losing their home soon. So what they'll do is go and gorge themselves. They gorge themselves on the nectar,
yeah.
or the honey, because they're going to be on the road for a while. And when they fill their stomachs up with honey, they can no longer bend their abdomen to sting you.
Ah.
That's one reason for smoking. The other reason for smoking is that when you open a hive, all of a sudden their butts turn to you and they start sending out a pheromone. It's an alarm pheromone to alarm all the other bees. We have a predator. But when you spread the smoke in, it covers up the alarm pheromone, so your bees remain a lot calmer.
So that's a way to kind of go in and check. And if you were just, you know, doing the straight up box hives and mm-hmm. someone was trying to keep bees for honey, how often would you normally go into a hive?
Every 2 weeks or every 12 days. Reason for that is that I mentioned earlier the worker bees mm-hmm. are in their pupae, the mm-hmm. pupae and all that stuff. From egg to adult is 21 days.
Yeah.
But for a queen, it's only 16 days. So if I check every 12 days, I'll find queen cells in there possibly.
Uh-huh.
If I waited more than 16 days, my hive would swarm because the queen, new queen would emerge. The old queen would take half the hive with her.
Oh.
So that's why I like to check it every 12 days to make sure there's no new queens.
And if there is one, what do you
do? Well, if there is one, a lot of times, a lot of beekeepers will just crush the cell to prevent the new queen from coming out. What I'll do is remove the frame and put it in another box and let that queen develop on her own. And that way, if one of my queens is getting old and very unproductive and the honeybees don't seem to like the queen, I can replace it with the new one that I just hatched.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Can the queen but the queen can't survive on her own.
No, when I take a frame out, there's always bees on it.
Okay, so she's got a little team that goes with her.
She's got a little colony that goes with her, and they keep her warm and they keep her fed. Queens don't feed themselves, and the workers feed them.
Wow.
So you've got to have a little bunch of bees in there just to keep her warm and to keep her fed.
Can you tell the difference between what your bees have been feeding on, like in the honey? Can you taste the difference?
Certain colors of the honey will let you know.
Tell you what they've been feeding.
The earlier honey is clearer, and the later honey is darker. And the clear honey around here that we get in the spring is usually from the maple trees.
Huh.
So maple honey is a nice choice honey. And it's very sweet and judged very well in honey shows.
Have you ever gone to honey shows?
Oh, yeah. They're annoying.
really?
Yeah. In order to present honey in a honey show, you have to bring it in a glass jar that's unlabeled. You have to take the top and have an extra top. So when you arrive there, you take the old top, throw it away, put the new top on it.
So there's a lot of obscure
A lot of weird rules. I once entered my honey into a show once, and it didn't go well for me.
Oh.
No, but that's a good thing. They'll take a flashlight and shine it through the honey to see how clear it is.
Yeah.
And my honey was foggy. You know, I like a honey you can chew. I want there to be all sorts of bee stuff in there.
Oh, so there's a preference for a clear.
Oh yeah, for judging, they want the absolutely clear, and they put it on this little thing to make sure the moisture content is right. So, as an end result, the winning honey, which they auctioned off, sold for about $20 less than my honey.
Huh.
Because people really want that raw honey with all the pollens and all the stuff in there.
So you've got a better product regardless.
I like my product. Yes.
That sounds great. So you teach about keeping bees as well.
I do.
And you speak about keeping bees. And I want, before we run out of time, I want to mention those.
I'll be doing a class at Clatsop Community College on Saturday, March 11th. From 9 a.m. till 4 p.m.
Okay.
If you want to come, just show up in class and register in class, and that's on Saturday, March 11th.
And if people have questions, they can probably contact the college and find out the room and the time and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, it's also in the spring schedule, and you can also find it online.
Okay. So. And you're also going to be giving a talk at the Clatsop County Master Gardeners Spring Into Gardening event.
Yes. And this is going to be more on the environmental consequences to honeybees and what we can do to help them along and what we're going to do if they go away.
I can't even imagine. That would be terrible. Like that sounds really fascinating. So that's on May 13th this
May
year 13th in 2017?
At the fairgrounds.
At the fairgrounds,
yes.
Yeah. So thanks so much for talking with us today. We appreciate it.
Happy to come out to your farm and give you a hand whenever.
That sounds great. I'll definitely take you up on that. Take care.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of In Season on Coast Community Radio. Many thanks to our guest Tom Trusiewicz for sharing his love of beekeeping with us. I hope you're inspired to plant some flowers to feed the bees this year, and take care not to spray anything that harms them. We can't afford to lose these wonderful creatures. Thanks also to In Season sound engineer Katie for helping to stitch this show together. This show will be available to listen to again on coastradio.org.